From runasradio.com, you're listening to Run As Radio, the internet audio talk show for IT professionals with Richard Campbell and Greg Hughes. This is Carl Franklin announcing show number 21 with guest David Lowe, recorded Thursday, August 9th, 2007. Run As Radio is produced each week by Pwop Productions, offering professional media and podcasting services online at pwop.com.
Hi, you're listening to Run As Radio, and I'm Richard Campbell, your host, with my co-host Greg Hughes.
Hello, everybody.
So, another great show coming up at the end of summer. It's almost time to get back to work, and conference season again.
Yes, it is. Conferences, conferences, conferences.
You going to a bunch?
You know, I've last year, 2006, was just huge for me. I was out doing some specialized speaking opportunities. This year, I've actually sort of made a conscious decision to try to have a little more of a life and a little less road time. I put 150,000 plus miles on airplanes last year, and I'm trying to keep it down well below 100,000 this year, and so far I'm being quite successful with that.
Yeah, that gets old, all that flying too.
It does, and you know, I mean, I really enjoy. We'll be flying to Spain here,
in
the next
Barcelona.
Few months, right? For Tech Ed Europe, as we've mentioned before, and I'm looking forward to that. And you know, I really do enjoy traveling. One of the things that people don't always realize about work-related travel is that, you know, wow, you get to go see really cool places and you get to go to all these great places. And quite often it's arriving at an airport, going to a hotel at night, getting up and going to an office building the next morning, sitting in there and having, you know, sometimes stressful conversations. or going inside a great big, you know, convention center or what have you, spending long, long days and then getting back on an airplane and flying back home.
We're definitely going to be working a lot in Barcelona.
Yes.
Certainly Speaker Idol goes on the entire show, so that's going to take up some time, although it's a ton of fun. But I'm also starting to plan out some panels. So maybe this is an opportunity for us to call out to the listeners. If you'd like to hear some panel discussions, we're going to be recording them at the IT Forum Week of Tech Ed in Barcelona, but we will put them up on the air so that you can listen to them on the Run As Radio show.
Right.
So if you've got particular panels you want to hear about, send us an email, info@runasradio.com.
Yeah, we'd be glad to hear your topic ideas and just, you know, what do you think is important? Because, you know, as always, audience-driven here, and we want to dive into the same cool stuff that you want us to.
Speaking of email, I got one for you.
All right.
This is an interesting one from John Parker. Hi, guys. Love the show. I'm a junior developer, but recently had a job which included sysadmin and DBA roles as well as developer, so it's nice to hear about the Windows stuff like Server 2008. I'm not very clued up on hardware, and I don't understand SANs and so forth, but I thought you might like this story. It's not a Notepad story, but it's interesting.
Okay.
Notepad story is especially interesting.
I think that makes it especially geeky or nerdy, depending on your point of view.
Right. We had a sysadmin who left, and about a month later, our web server, which was an HP Xeon with 3 gigs of RAM and small business server, also Active Directory, external and internal website, file sharing and exchange.
On one server?
30 clients.
Oh my God.
Oh man, started to go crazy. No kidding. I'm amazed it worked at all.
Yeah. When you put domain controller and Exchange server together in the same sentence, I mean, right there.
You're doomed.
Well, you add all that other stuff on there. But go ahead.
The problem was the virtual memory. At one point, shutting down took 10 minutes.
That's all?
After rebooting, the virtual memory go up in nice steps to around 100 megabytes and not come down.
I'll tell you, you know what? That's that Exchange server competing with all that other stuff on there.
Oh, yeah. Exchange does not work and play well with others.
No, no.
The worst it got was 10 gigabytes. That's more than 3 times the physical memory.
Which is another indicator of a problem.
Yeah, good sign. The funny thing was that the physical memory utilization was fine. Eventually, we got someone in to look at it, and after some troubleshooting, the consultant figured out that it was heap decommitted free block threshold registry setting, which was set way too low, causing server virtual memory fragmentation.
Right.
Okay, I wonder how that got messed up. So there you go. Don't have your domain controller, Active Directory, website, file share, and Exchange on the same box.
Especially domain controller and Exchange.
Yeah.
It's just a competing world. And you know what? And depending on the version of Exchange and depending on what else going on there, you know, Exchange doesn't always play well on a domain controller.
Yeah.
I know that people will sometimes argue against that, but I mean, I've seen that happen in the real world.
Yeah, it's interesting with Exchange and domain controllers. There's a group of people who say they should always be together.
Wrong.
There's groups of people who say they should never be together.
Correct. So
I see which camp you fall into.
I fall squarely into that camp, yes.
Plus, I learned a lot about Windows memory. A show or two on memory management wouldn't go astray.
That's a good idea, actually. Yeah. It's one of the more complicated and difficult to wrap your brain around things in Windows. The other thing is that for people that are managing desktops, is that Vista memory utilization and Windows Server 2008 memory utilization is different than previous versions.
True. So I think that's well worth talking about.
It is. And I think that's a good point that we should probably look into that.
Well, there's another call out for the listeners. Hey, do you want to have some shows on Vista? Because personally, my feeling these days is ReadyBoost is a plague and we should never use it.
I've used ReadyBoost on one of my computers and ended up having some glitches and I've stopped using it as a result.
Yeah, I think we should pull together that list of, you know, what's your base configuration of Vista look like right now? Because the length of stuff I'm changing is getting longer, starting with turning off IPv6.
Yep. Well, and the other thing is that with Windows Server 2008 coming out right at the end of this year, and with you know, all the different, you know, this is just such a huge time for changes and new stuff coming out over the last year and coming up over the next year. There's an awful lot to talk about in terms of, you know, what is that underlying management and the tweaking and the really setting your server up for, you know, for the best resource utilization. And talking about what's changed in that area.
Speaking of 2008, I guess we should get to our show.
Yeah, we're going to talk about an aspect of Windows Server 2008 today.
All right, Greg, let's introduce David Lowe. David Lowe is a senior product manager for Windows Server with Microsoft Corporation. In this role, he manages worldwide evaluation and deployment programs for Windows Server 2008. David has also been with Microsoft since 2001, and in this time, he has also been a senior product manager for security and IT professional portfolios with Microsoft Learning. Prior to joining Microsoft, David was a senior lecturer in internet technologies at the Center for Advanced Technology Training in Dublin, Ireland, where he specializes in web development and XML. David holds a Bachelor of Science degree from the University College in Dublin and is the author of BizTalk Server, the Complete Reference, published by Osborne McGraw-Hill. Welcome, David.
Thank you.
So we're talking Windows Server Core, but you want to talk about a specific aspect of it because I know it's a huge product.
Sure. Windows Server 2008 is our next generation server operating system. We're on track to ship it around the end of this calendar year, and we just actually announced our launch date, which is February 27th, 2008. And we'll be launching alongside SQL Server 2008 and also Visual Studio 2008. But today I want to talk about the Server Core installation option, which is an option that customers will get during setup when they're actually installing Windows Server 2008.
So this is like a special installation of Windows Server 2008.
That's correct. So with Windows 2000 Server or Windows Server 2003, customers have been very familiar with our wonderful graphical user interface and all of the great utilities that we provide, our Microsoft management consoles, our task scheduler and event viewer. And of course, we've actually enhanced many of those tools in Windows Server 2008. But we also know that customers want to be able to install a server and have it just do its job and sit there in a server room and have minimal management and maintenance overhead. So they, for example, would like to set up a domain controller or a file server or maybe a web server and really set it and forget it and perhaps only have to manage it remotely on the odd occasion. So for that reason, we provided a new Server Core installation option. And as I mentioned, during installation, customers will be given a choice of going for either a full installation, and that will be the more familiar installation, which comes with all the various server roles and features, comes with the new Server Manager application and all its enhanced tools and utilities. They'll be able to use Internet Explorer to read HTML-based reports. They'll be able to use the event viewer to receive subscriptions of events that perhaps even take place on other machines. They'll be able to do all the great local management of a server that they would normally be used to.
I'm a guy who comes from the NT3.1 world, and I hate to say it, but I loved my CLI version of NT. Is that what you're talking about here, a GUI-less Windows?
In a way, that's exactly what we're talking about.
Wow.
We're saying that if there's a server that you're not going to be interacting with physically, you're not going to be sitting down in front of that local server and, you know, performing management tasks directly on it. But instead, for example, you want to be able to use either Microsoft or third-party management tools to do remote management, which many enterprise IT professionals, of course, do today. Or if you want to be able to, for example, run scripts in order to perform administration, you'll be able to do so with this server core installation option. And you'll also know that because we've reduced the server footprint by not installing things like the graphical user interface, Windows Explorer, Internet Explorer, you know, Windows Media Player. We do have Notepad, by the way. We do have RegEdit. So there are a couple of, you know, still sort of important tools that we have left in there. But we've reduced the server footprint by about 80%, and any local administration would pretty much need to be done through the command line.
Now, Notepad and RegEdit, if those are in there, is there a graphical user interface and it's just very limited, or how are those used?
It really depends on how you think about a graphical user interface. I mean, Some people would say, hey, look, there's the command prompt, but it's running in a window. Does that mean that we're still running Windows? And yes, of course, we're still running Windows. We have kept in place a number of subsystems that, you know, provide a certain amount of graphical support. But if you think about how Windows Explorer and Internet Explorer and the various file, open, and save dialog boxes interact, and how they interact with the desktop, and how they're integrated with the taskbar. There are so many of those things that are all kind of integrated together that are not present in a server core installation option. But opening up a Notepad window or opening up RegEdit, even opening up a couple of control panels that we've left in, for example, for being able to configure regional settings, or the date and time. Those things have been left in there because they don't have good command line equivalents. And we've been able to do so without having to bring all the rest of the shell and the graphical user interface with it.
Now, you mentioned a couple of the different roles that are available in the core installation of Windows Server 2008. Can you talk a little more about those roles? And do I choose just one role during a core installation, or am I able to choose more than one? I mean, how does that work?
Well, with the full installation of Windows Server 2008, there are about 17 different server roles and quite a large number, 30 or 40 different server features that you can install. Obviously, with the server core installation, it's a subset of those that are available. So, for example, you do have Active Directory domain services. So your server core box can be a domain controller. We also have Active Directory lightweight directory services. It can be a file server or a print server. It runs core network infrastructure roles like DHCP, DNS, and then it will also run IIS and also Windows Media Services. So it can even be a web server, although it doesn't provide the full functionality in IIS that you would get with a full installation of Windows Server 2008.
Like .NET Framework, for example, is not supported on the core role.
That is correct. Right. So, again, there are a number of dependencies in Windows between different subsystems and how they integrate and interact.
Sure.
And we found that because of the way the .NET framework is currently built, that in order to include it in the server core installation, because there are so many different hooks into Windows and the full graphical user interface, that to bring in the .NET framework would actually require bringing in about 80 or 90% of what we actually tried to take out. So in Windows Server 2008, the server core installation option does not have or support the .NET framework.
Sure.
And therefore, you cannot, for example, have ASP.NET web applications on IIS. But you can have ASP web applications, and you can have CGI applications. And in fact, we've published some great CGI modules, including a new fast CGI module for PHP support, which will run absolutely wonderfully on a server core installation.
That's cool.
What about RDP? What does an RDP client look like when it connects to the server?
Well, because RDP really just presents you with a picture of what's appearing on the local screen, you get a picture of a blue desktop with a command prompt window.
Right.
So if you connect over RDP, which you are able to do, so RDP is present, you will just be able to connect remotely and run your and run the command line interface from a remote machine. We do also provide actually what we call the Windows Remote Shell. And the Windows Remote Shell is a shell that you can open on a remote machine, and it talks to the server core installation through Windows Remote Management, which is an implementation of the WS management standards. So it allows for management over HTTP, or rather HTTPS, I should say, so that you could actually perform remote management of your server core installation from a command line, from another box, even over a firewall.
This sounds very SSH-like.
It's very SSH-like, but it is not SSH.
Right.
So help me to understand. I want to make sure that everyone gets a clear understanding from an installation standpoint. If I choose to do a core installation, does that mean that all of those core roles are installed, or does it mean that I have to choose one of those roles and only one, or does it mean that I can choose from among those roles and install any number of them that I wish?
You can choose one or more roles to be installed, but none are installed by default.
Gotcha.
And that is an important point, because with Windows Server 2008, building on what we did in Windows Server 2003 to provide a secure by default installation, with Windows Server 2003, although the components were physically present, they weren't enabled unless you said, for example, I want this to be a DNS server, or I want this to be a web server.
Sure.
We've taken that a step further with Windows Server 2008, and that we actually don't install the components at all until you go through a process, either through script or through Server Manager, or by using the OC setup command line utility for the server core installation option that says, I want this to be a file server, or I want this to be a web server. Only at that point do the components actually get extracted from an installation cache and installed in the Windows System 32 directory. So this means that with both full and server core installations, that unless you have a role physically installed and configured, the components will not be there, and as a result, that should reduce the management and servicing overhead.
It also reduces the security footprint.
It absolutely does provide for potentially reduced attack surface as well, definitely.
Right.
David, do you have a picture of, given that I installed no features, I have a bare Windows installation, how much smaller is the footprint on a bare core installation versus a bare standard 2008 installation?
Roughly speaking, and these things do kind of change as we go through the different development milestones.
You are in beta, so.
That is correct. Beta 3 was the last major milestone we had. You can expect a full installation of Windows Server 2008 to run sort of perhaps up to about 7 or 8 gigabytes. With a server core installation, it's really between 1 and 2 gigabytes.
So what about the memory footprint reduction?
This is a question that tends to apply more depending on the configuration of the server. Because obviously, the amount of memory required will depend on the load that you're placing on the server.
Right.
It will depend on, you know, how many applications perhaps that are, or server roles, you know, that you have installed, and how active that server is. But we do know that there is less memory required. However, the minimal memory needed to install Windows Server 2008, regardless of whether you're looking at full or server core installation, is 512 megabytes. So it will not actually install. The setup process will stop if you have less than 512 megabytes. However, if you're using, for example, a virtual machine, we have seen that it's quite possible to install a server core installation of Windows Server 2008 in a virtual machine with 512 megabytes of RAM, and after installation, reduce the amount of memory that's available to that virtual machine significantly and still have it function.
Wow.
Interesting.
However, that's more for people to play around with, test, say, hey, isn't that cool? But, you know, we're still saying that 512 megabytes is the minimum supported RAM.
Gotcha.
Now, I got to think this is a phenomenal feature for virtual machines.
Definitely, both as a guest and as a host.
Really?
So, if you're thinking about running multiple virtual machines and you're thinking, well, I want to have a nice minimal installation of Windows Server on which, for example, I can have a file server or a print server, server core installation option is absolutely appropriate in that case. And by having it in a virtual machine, you're using less storage, although, of course, the storage will depend on how many files you're actually serving.
Right.
And you have a lower memory footprint, and you have that reduced overall server footprint and reduced attack surface. But in the future, we will actually support Windows Server virtualization, which is our new hypervisor-based virtualization technology that will be releasing within 180 days of Windows Server 2008. That will also be a supported role for a server core installation, meaning that you can have virtualization hosts where what we call the parent virtual machine, which is, you know, the equivalent of the physical box in which you install virtualization, is in fact running a server core installation.
So
again, that greatly reduces the overall footprint for virtualization, makes more resources available for the virtual machines that you're going to be running, and reduces the management and maintenance and servicing overhead for that virtualization host.
So we've heard this term hypervisor. I don't want to get off on too much of a tangent, but when talking about virtualization, hypervisor, why don't you explain to the audience what that is in a nutshell so that when it comes up, we'll have a good, clear understanding.
Sure. If you think about some of the virtualization solutions available today, with Windows Server 2003 running Virtual Server 2005 or 2, you can think of the physical hardware with a physical operating system installed on top, and then you have virtualization software installed on top of that. And then any virtual machines that are being run will need to communicate through the virtualization software, through the operating system, down to the hardware. So what a hypervisor is a very, very thin layer of code that performs all the management and scheduling and resource allocation functions that the physical operating system previously would have done. So it means that you can actually have virtual machines that are talking much more directly to the hardware, and it's this hypervisor which is actually doing the resource allocation and the management of those virtual machines. And in that case, although there is still a physical operating system, the physical operating system in Windows Server 2008, when you install virtualization, will actually itself function as if it were a virtual machine. So it will sit above the hypervisor, meaning it'll sit above the virtualization software, rather than sitting underneath it and being another layer that the virtual machines have to talk through.
It's pretty powerful stuff, and it really seems to cater to the concept. I mean, these between hypervisor and core, we've now got... arguably the leanest version of server we've ever seen. It seems to just encourage me to create isolated servers for every specific resource we need. I'll have a separate DNS server, a separate Active Directory server, and so forth. And I'm going to minimize that overhead to put them all in the same virtual machine. They're going to cost the least amount they can possibly cost.
That's one potential configuration. We are sure that there will be some customers that will have a virtualization host, and they'll be running server core virtual machines, each one with an individual role. But in Windows Server 2008, it's not necessary to do that. For example, you could have a server core installation that's running Active Directory domain services, and that's running file, print services as well. And those services will play very well together, and they'll operate alongside each other, without any great impact. And in fact, one of the ways in which, we've worked to make this not just possible, but desirable, is when we think about customers that, perhaps have a number of geographical locations and perhaps have small branch offices. We know, for example, that there are many customers who today are installing domain controllers in their branch offices in order to provide a local authentication experience for the employees that they have working in those branch offices. And yet they, you know, don't want to have to deal with security implications or the management implications of having a full domain controller running in those branch offices. And of course, they want to keep it separate from other services they might need to provide there, like file and print. So what we've done in Windows Server 2008, and again, this builds on Server Core, is you can have a Server Core installation running Active Directory domain services, but you can make it what we call a read-only domain controller. And a read-only domain controller is capable of handling and authorizing local authentication requests, but it doesn't contain a writable copy of the Active Directory database, and nor does it contain a full copy. So number one, it means that it's not possible to corrupt the directory by having somebody with no IT skills in a branch office messing around with that server.
Right.
And two, if that physical server were to be compromised or stolen, it's possible to, in fact, not just possible, but it's the default password replication policy that no passwords are cached on that local read-only domain controller. So it would not be possible for somebody to use a password cracking tool to try and retrieve the secrets from that database. But even better than that, the Active Directory domain services service is restartable. You can stop it and start it just like any other service. So if you do need to do some kind of local maintenance in a branch office, you can stop the domain controller service and still have a functioning member server providing file and print services to the employees working at that branch office.
You're talking about stopping the root, the main server, the read-write one, then the branch office has their local copy that they can continue to sign in on.
No, I mean, if, for example, you needed to do some maintenance on that read-only domain controller.
On that branch server.
Yes, you could stop the domain controller service on that read-only domain controller without having to shut down or reboot the machine.
Right.
And it would effectively and instantly become a member server that would continue to service requests to, for example, file and print or DHCP service.
But not authentication.
Correct, until you brought it back up.
Yeah, we'd be bringing authentication perhaps through the WAN connection then?
Exactly. So if a read-only domain controller is offline, then authentication requests would simply go to the next available domain controller.
Which may be farther away. One other angle that sort of hit me is that this almost sounds like the version you'd want to make into an appliance, like a file server appliance could be running the core edition of Windows Server 2008.
So appliances, whereas it's definitely true that the Server Core installation option is more appropriate for headless scenarios.
Right.
And therefore, you know, you can extrapolate that to say that it's more appropriate for appliances. Typically with appliances, we tend to work with partners and OEMs to build out, you know, specific devices. And there's nothing for us to kind of announce at this time, but, you know, we are certainly talking to partners about potential opportunities for appliances that might have the Server Core installation option at its base.
And I think about the forefront appliances that are out there these days that would really benefit from that as well. What about 64-bit?
Well, 64-bit is, if you like, the default almost for Windows Server 2008. We know that more and more customers are, you know, deploying and implementing their mission-critical workloads on 64-bit hardware. And in fact, it's almost impossible to buy new 32-bit server hardware these days.
Right.
And any of the OEMs that we're working with, we're only going to be certifying 64-bit hardware for Windows Server 2008 because, again, they're simply not building new 32-bit server hardware. So when you go to purchase Windows Server 2008, for example, when you go to buy Windows Server 2008 Enterprise, you'll actually be getting 64-bit software. If you need to buy 32-bit software, you'll have to buy Windows Server 2008 32-bit. So we're kind of making the 64-bit edition the default because we know that's what most customers are looking to.
Well, that
but we
makes
absolutely
sense.
Still do have 32-bit and 64-bit versions available, although we've announced already that this will be the last 32-bit Server operating system. And the next version of Windows Server will be 64-bit only.
It seems pretty reasonable. It's everywhere now. The hardware's been around for a long time, so I can't see us really needing to worry about it much anymore.
And there are so many workloads, you know, that can really take advantage of that now. I mean, web workloads and database workloads, terminal services. You know, there are lots of different ways now in which customers are looking at how they can benefit from using 64-bit hardware.
So you've probably, I mean, the beta is out. And do you have any stories of creative uses of the core installations of Windows Server 2008 or anything maybe that surprised you in terms of the way that people are working with it?
That's interesting. Do we have any creative stories? Well, one of the things about the server core installation option is that it's not designed as an application server, but it does still provide, you know, a great deal of application support. Mm-hmm. Obviously, all the networking, file input, output, and security subsystems are present. And although we don't have the .NET framework, it's still very possible to run a number of different applications on Windows Server 2008. And in fact, we found that it's possible even today, before we've brought out our new hypervisor-based virtualization, that it's possible to actually install and run Virtual Server 2005 or 2 on a server core installation of Windows Server 2008.
So would you just use the web interface to do the management, or how does that work?
That's correct. You can just use the web interface to do the management. So in fact, I believe we have, some of our MVPs, our most valuable professionals, have already been blogging about cool things to do with server core installations. So things like adding support for Notepad and RegEdit and the control panels, they came later when we found that there were things that customers needed to be able to do, and things like Virtual Server and IIS and even Windows Media Services were things that we found that, although we didn't think you might be able to do it with a server core installation, that it was actually quite possible to do. But the Virtual Server one is probably the most interesting of those. And of course, you should remember as well that the subsystem for Unix applications is also available in a server core installation option. So without getting into any detail on that, that obviously opens up a number of other opportunities for customers to run applications of different types on a server core installation.
Now, what's not going to run on server core? I'm thinking stuff like Exchange and SQL Server.
Server core installations, they're not designed as enterprise application servers in that way.
Right.
So we will not be supporting applications like Exchange Server or SQL Server on the server core installation. It is possible in the future that there might be other software that we release, and we'll work with the different product teams here in Microsoft to have versions that will run on the server core installation. But there's nothing to announce or talk about in terms of future plans at this time. But we are working very closely with third-party independent software vendors. Number one, to make sure that we have good backup, antivirus, and other kind of storage and security solutions available.
Right.
Because customers will still need to have that level of support. Make sure that we have management agents that will run. And we've actually published guidance then for these ISVs on how they can write applications that will run and behave properly on server core installation. So for example, if they're dependent on balloon notifications, well, that won't work.
Well, and I got to imagine that all that stuff that goes into the sys tray is going to have problems.
Right. We today already have, if you think about some antivirus software that, might install a real-time monitor in the system tray.
Right.
Just because it can't install that in the system tray doesn't mean that the real-time monitoring functionality is not still going to be present. It's just that if you're reliant on certain things, requiring a local graphical interface, that's where perhaps you might run into some issues.
This sounds like something that developers just need to think about for a little while, and they should be able to implement a lot of apps into core relatively easily.
I mean, with servers, you tend to think less about graphical applications that people interact with. I mean, a server is more designed as something that, again, sits there and just serves people. So it's more about providing those subsystems on which these applications can run. And then if perhaps added as a client piece of it, you know, then the client can provide whatever support might be required. I mean, if you think about IIS, it seems kind of strange, but when you connect to a web server on a server core box, you know, you can get some incredibly rich websites. You know, they're interactive, they have dynamic HTML, they might have embedded Flash or media. I mean, they can be incredibly rich graphical websites, but they're being served up by a box with nothing more than a command line interface.
Absolutely. What about server patching? Because all that stuff's done through IE or through the patching services. What's going to happen to that in core?
Well, automatic updates is available in server core, and we provide a script that can enable automatic updating. And the automatic updating can be done either directly to the internet, or it can be done through Windows Server Update Services. So really, there should be no difference from an automatic patching standpoint. And likewise, management agents, you know, can also be installed on a server core installation so that they can talk to whatever perhaps third-party systems management software will be responsible for downloading patches. But of course, we expect that patching will be you know, something that's required much less often with server core.
So is this the WMI interface that a lot of that stuff would typically be interfaced through?
Sure. I mean, server core includes both RPC and WMI. And that actually brings up two interesting points from a management standpoint. By having RPC available, it means that you can manage a server role on a server core box from a remote machine using a management console.
Right.
So there's nothing to stop you, for example, and in fact, I do this you know, myself with the server core server you know, that I have even here in my office. I have a file server running, and when I need to manage it, I actually manage it from another Windows Server 2008 installation, which is a full installation, and open up the necessary management console and point it toward the server core box.
Right.
And it's able to manage it just fine. Likewise, with Active Directory users and computers, or, you know, DNS or any of those other management consoles.
Sure.
And then from a WMI standpoint, one thing that, again, does not work by virtue of not having the .NET framework is it's not possible to run Windows PowerShell scripts locally on a server core installation because PowerShell relies on the .NET framework.
But PowerShell scripts that leverage WMI against the machine that you're connecting to remotely.
Exactly.
Gotcha.
So because WMI is available, you can run a PowerShell script on another machine that calls the necessary WMI interfaces in order to configure or read information from the server core box.
Well, that's good to know, because I mean, I know many, many IT people who picked up on PowerShell before it was released and then when it was released, and have really done some pretty amazing things in terms of automating and instrumenting management and maintenance and monitoring using PowerShell.
Exactly.
Well, guys, we've tore through a half hour, and I feel like we just got started on core. There's so many things to talk about here. Well, so we're going to see the shipping version by the end of the year.
Sure. We're on track to release Windows Server 2008 around the end of calendar year 2007. And I mean, just recently, of course, we announced that we were providing support for IIS, but we're far enough along in the development cycle now that, you know, we don't expect people to see too many more surprises in terms of brand new features or functionality. At this point, we're focusing on, you know, just improving overall quality and performance between now and the time we release.
Right.
So the virtualization support that you mentioned earlier is a former core role. That's going to be after the actual release of the server product.
Well, we will be releasing a beta version of Windows Server Virtualization when we RTM.
Okay.
And then the final RTM version of Windows Server Virtualization you know, will release within 180 days of our RTM. So it's on a separate development timeline. But yes, definitely people will be able to work with pre-release versions of virtualization with Windows Server 2008, you know, certainly, you know, by the time we release.
That's great. Thanks very much for taking the time to educate us today.
No problem. Thanks for having me on the show.
And we'll talk to you next week on Run As Radio.